Fall colors are hitting their peak in many places. Wisconsin Trails editor Chelsea Lewis is an expert at seeking them out. So where would she suggest you head this week? Find out later in today's Behind the Headlines. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. And to new and old listeners alike, thanks for tuning in. Wisconsin is the only state in the nation where children as young as 10 can be tried as adults for first-degree intentional homicide. Right now, 68 people are serving life in prison for crimes they committed before they turned 17. For a story published Sunday, reporter Kara Lombardo interviewed some of them about their lives, their crimes, and their hopes for redemption. She spoke with criminal justice watchdog reporter Gina Barton about the story.
Today I'm here with Kara Lombardo, who has a story in Sunday's paper about people serving life terms who committed their crimes when they were juveniles. Hi, Kara. Thanks for being with us this week.
Hi, Gina.
So in reporting this story, you learned that there are 68 people serving life terms in Wisconsin's prisons who were sentenced as juveniles. Can you tell us about some of those people?
Of course. Yeah, one of the people I met, in fact, the only female on the list, was Latasha Armstead. She happened to be the youngest person ever charged as an adult. She was 13 at the time of the crime that sent her to adult court. So she and her older boyfriend actually planned to kill her grandmother's home health aide and steal her car. Latasha has since said that it was because her mother, who was drug addicted and mainly absent, had come home asking for their help, getting money to pay her drug dealer and promising to come home if they could help. She was the youngest person at the time in 1997 when she was charged to be charged as an adult. One of the themes that kept coming up as I looked into these cases was that many of them had traumatic upbringings. One such person was Garland Hampton. He had an extremely traumatic upbringing. He lived with his mother and grandmother, both of whom were abusive toward him. He told me on the phone at around the time when he was arrested for killing a fellow gang member that the social services of Milwaukee County had told him their house was one of the homes they received the most phone calls from. At one point, his grandmother sent him to the store to buy lettuce, and he came back with cabbage, and he got a death threat because of that. So this is not a typical upbringing, and that was a theme we kept seeing in a lot of these cases.
So what makes Wisconsin unique in terms of the way it treats young offenders?
So Wisconsin is actually the only state in the country where a juvenile charged with homicide is charged as an adult initially. Now, there are mechanisms through which a judge can move that case back to juvenile jurisdiction, but I spoke to a public defender who said he believes that has probably happened less than a handful of times, maybe less than five times in the history of that being possible. So that is something that's very rare. For the most part, if a child who is as young as 10 is charged with murder, the case will likely stay in adult court. And that has huge ramifications in terms of their sentencing and what happens next.
Why is that a big deal for a 10-year-old to be in adult court rather than in juvenile court?
In addition to shorter sentences in juvenile court, there's also required involvement of guardians or parents. The court will take into account what's happening at home and actually integrate that into the treatment and rehabilitation plans. We don't see that happening as much in adult court. And in adult court, the individual will be responsible for making all of their legal decisions. They can ask their families, if they have families around, for advice, but ultimately they will be in charge of making the decision. So we've seen here with several of these individuals, when they were offered the plea deals, their lawyers, a family member who was around, often encouraged them to take it, but they ended up deciding against it in many cases.
We're talking about teenagers who are saying, no, I don't want a plea deal. They're making decisions that are affecting the rest of their lives. They can't vote. Some of them can't drive. They can't join the military, but they can decide whether they want to plead guilty or not.
That's right. And at least two or three of the people I spoke to said at the time, like Adam Purcell, I'm thinking of, who was a gang member. He was arrested after he was involved in a shooting that ended up killing an 18-year-old in a rival gang. Adam Purcell said at the time that he was offered a plea deal to stay in juvenile court. He did not understand the concept of being party to a crime. The particular circumstances of the crime he was charged with, there were at least two or three people in his group who were shooting. They weren't able to determine whose bullet caused the death. So Adam, at the time, was convinced that his bullet had not caused a death, and therefore he wasn't guilty. For whatever reason, the explanation of party to a crime had never settled in his head at the time, he said.
So he didn't understand that whether it was his bullet or not, he was just as responsible.
That's right.
Wow. What is the conventional wisdom out there about why the criminal justice system should treat young people differently than adults?
Well, there's been a lot of talk in the past several years, especially, you know, the Supreme Court decisions that were banning mandatory life without parole for juveniles. Much of those were based on the fact that brains at these ages are still developing. Though not everybody at these ages obviously commits crimes, there is research to support the fact that their brains are not fully formed at this point, and that should be taken into account.
And that should be taken into account on both sides of the equation, right? Like, they're more impulsive, so that might be one reason why they committed the crime, but then also they're more easily able to be rehabilitated, right?
That's exactly right.
So you had mentioned these Supreme Court decisions. Are those Supreme Court decisions going to help these people in Wisconsin get out of prison sooner?
Of the people on the list we're looking at, the 68 people here, they really could only be applied to three cases. The Supreme Court rulings covered mandatory life sentences without parole for juveniles. So many of the people that we're looking at will be eligible for parole. There's no direct connection, but many lawyers are considering whether when parole is so unlikely, it becomes effective life without parole.
How unlikely is parole for these people?
The numbers are so small. There are so few instances of people released on parole, maybe 0 to 1 a year, that it's really hard to determine patterns.
So it sounds like you're saying that these Supreme Court decisions probably won't help these people here, at least not in the short term.
That's right.
So how are they dealing with that?
Well, many of the people I spoke to still stay hopeful. They don't really see an option other than that. So almost everybody I spoke to kept that hopeful attitude, and they're preparing should they get the opportunity. They're also keeping abreast of all the legal cases that could be relevant. So the Supreme Court rulings, though not directly correlated, they were hopeful to see those.
Well, thanks a lot for talking with me today. This is really interesting and important work you've done.
Thanks so much, Gina.
Again, Kara's story is running in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Pick up a copy to read more. Additional information is also available at jsonline.com. As I mentioned earlier, Wisconsin Trails editor Chelsea Lewis is an expert at finding fall colors. So where are the best places for hiking, biking, and driving this season? Chelsea sat down with reporter Sarah Hauer to talk about this week's Day Out column on the Kettle Moraine's Northern Unit and how long we can expect the fall colors to stick around.
Sarah Hauer here with Chelsea Lewis. This week, Chelsea wrote a column about the northern unit of Kettle Moraine and how it's about its prime time for leave watching.
Yeah, fall colors are nearing their peak in southern Wisconsin. They're kind of past peak in northern Wisconsin. So I always say that, like, Wisconsin's Northwoods are the best place to see fall colors because you just have these really dense forests of hardwoods. So, you know, you get the nice maples and oaks, but mixed in with evergreens, and it's just, like, beautiful. But those leaves are kind of on their way out. So now it's the time for the southern part of the state to shine. And I just love the Cattle Marine State Forest if you're looking for some fall adventure. A lot of people like to do fall drives, and the Cattle Marine is great because there's a scenic drive that kind of traces the whole forest, both the southern and northern units. The northern unit is really great because it's more, like, forested, I guess I would say, than the southern unit. The southern unit has more, like, restored oak savanna, so kind of more open areas. There's definitely some tree areas, obviously, but the northern unit is really maple-dominated, and maples are just gorgeous in the fall. Like, the sugar maple is the star of the fall. It's that tree that you see that is, like, that bright yellow, and mm-hmm. then it kind of goes through the whole color spectrum. Sometimes you'll get some really nice oranges and reds, and there's some just a lot of stands of maples in the northern Kettle Moraine. So, yeah, it's a great spot for catching fall colors, and this is the perfect time to do it.
Great. So Kettle Moraine is huge, right?
Yeah.
It's 30,000 acres or something?
Just the northern unit, yeah.
Just the northern unit.
Yeah, and that's through, like, I think 3 or 4 counties it ends up going through. So it's big. It's really big.
Okay. So where are your top places to go within that huge expansive area?
Yeah. Well, if you want to just do a drive, I mean, you can drive. It's probably, I'm going to screw this up, but probably like 40 miles, 30 or 40 miles from bottom to top, from south to north or north to south, whichever way you want to go. So you could easily drive that in a day and maybe stop in a couple places. But if you want to kind of get out and stretch your legs, there are a lot of great trail systems. One of my favorite spots is the Parnell Tower. So it's just a quick hike up a hill. It is a little bit up. I mean, there's like 300 some steps just to get to the tower, and then another like 100 steps to get up the tower. But the views from the top are just fabulous. And the northern unit has a lot of glacial topography. So you get these like hills that kind of pop out of the landscape that are known as cames, and those are really cool. At the top of the tower, you can see a bunch of those. So that's a great spot. As far as hiking goes, I really like the Greenbush trails. They're really popular with skiers in the winter, but in the warm weather months, they're open to hikers and mountain bikers, actually, but you're on like separate trails from the bikers, so you don't have to worry about that. And kind of like they're like the classic Kettle Moraine hike because you go through those forested areas. They're these nice, wide, really well-maintained paths because they are ski trails. So they're really nice trails, just really beautiful. And they're loops. I love loop trails. Like the Ice Age Trail is fabulous. Don't get me wrong. Love it. But you usually kind of have to do an out and back hike and you're passing the same stuff. But loop trails are great because you just do a loop and you start where you finish and you see new scenery the entire way. So there are like 4 loops there you can choose from like a mile and a half up to like 8 miles if you're feeling really ambitious.
Okay. Loop trails are what I need because I have a history of getting lost in Kettle Moraine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, loop it up. And the Greenbush trails are pretty well marked because they are ski trails. There's like maps at different junctions and they've got the color coding going on. So you could potentially get lost again because that Ice Age trail cuts through there. And I know sometimes people will hop on a loop trail system and then get on the Ice Age trail and all of a sudden they're like way out and don't even realize they're out of the system. So
that's what happened to me.
Yep. You got to watch out. The yellow is always the Ice Age trail. So if you see yellow and you don't see any other colors when you're hiking, like you're on the Ice Age trail and you should probably turn around.
Okay. Good advice. One thing that I wanted to ask you about, because you mentioned a kind of tree in your story that I wasn't really knowledgeable about.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued. So it's the coniferous?
Coniferous.
Yeah. So it's an evergreen-looking tree in the summer, but in the winter, its needles change.
So it's the tamarack. The tamarack looks like a it is a coniferous tree. Like it has. No, it's all good. This is kind of weird. So the tamarack totally looks like an evergreen. It has needles. It looks like a pine, kind of. But the needles actually change color. They change this really beautiful golden color, and then they drop. So it's not technically an evergreen. It's like technically a deciduous tree because the leaves or the needles fall. So yeah, tamaracks are super pretty, and a lot of people don't realize that, like, you could have an evergreen essentially that loses its needles.
Yeah. I noticed that, and I just never, I may have seen one.
You probably
thought it
have.
Was a dead
yeah,
tree.
Exactly. It kind of, it can look dead, but when it first turns, it's really pretty. And those tend to turn later than like maples and stuff. So if you miss peak color for the sugar maples, you'll probably catch the tamaracks. And there's some really good stands around Moth Lake. It's a rec area in the Calmarine. There's like a 2-mile trail that goes around the lake there that there are some really nice tamaracks there. So, yeah.
Okay, and so how much longer would you say we have for good fall colors? Because it,
yeah,
it
we're
feels like
close.
They're yeah. winding down.
Yeah, they come quick. I mean, I would say probably another week for week and a half for like peak color. But there's always lingering colors. You know, even if some of the, like, birch and aspen lose their leaves or the oaks lose their leaves, you're still going to have, like, pockets of color. And, of course, you have, like, the carpet of leaves on the ground. That's always really fun and beautiful to hike through. And we still have, like, decently nice weather, you know, temperature-wise. So even if you kind of miss peak, you can still get out and enjoy it a little bit.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Chelsea.
Thank you.
To read Chelsea's column, grab a copy of today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. That column is also available on wisconsintrails.com. A battle is brewing between yogurt maker Dannon and farmers. Dannon insists that its ingredients be GMO-free. But this isn't flying with Wisconsin farmers. Reporter Rick Barrett joined Tom Dakin with the story.
Hi, this is Tom Dakin, business reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JS Online, and I am hosting this week's weekly podcast for our business news section. I'm joined by my colleague Rick Barrett, who has written a story about a conflict between Dannon, the world's largest yogurt producer, and groups that represent farmers, including those in Wisconsin. Rick, what is the conflict about?
Well, thanks, Tom. Dannon says it's offering more products made without genetically modified organism or GMO ingredients. The company says that the changes have come from consumer demand in the marketplace. And Dannon also says that it has a very strong commitment to sustainable agriculture.
And how the farm groups responded to that?
Well, the farm groups have basically said that Dannon's claim about sustainable agriculture is misguided. They say that the methods they use to raise their crops now, including GMO varieties, are actually better for the environment because they use fewer chemicals, fewer pesticides, and it's better for the overall environment.
And yet, despite that point of view, from Dannon's perspective, they have customers, consumers, who don't want anything to do with GMO, and that's what they're responding to, correct?
That's correct, Tom. Dannon will say that its customers want more choices and that there is definitely an increasing preference for foods that don't have GMO ingredients in them.
And so the farmers are afraid that if they are forced to go without GMO, they will go backwards in terms of their productivity, their efficiency. It will cut into their profit margins. That's a serious risk, I gather, they feel, to their businesses. How are the farm groups responding? What are they doing in reaction to Dannon's action?
Well, the farm groups are basically trying to make their strongest case in saying that conventional agriculture is very sustainable, that the business practices are solid, and they don't want to go back to 1990.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like a great story. We'll read all about it at JS Online and in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks, Tom.
If you're curious about this story, keep an eye out at jsonline.com/business. You'll find it there first. With politicians lobbying against each other, PolitiFact is one of the surest ways to find accurate information during an election season. So how do presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump fare on PolitiFact's Truthometer? Reporter Tom Kircher broke down their performances during this week's JS on Politics show.
We're joined now by Tom Kircher, one of our PolitiFact Wisconsin reporters, to talk about the debate last night and how the candidates fared on the Truthometer. So, Tom, we're going to run through some claims here, first starting with one from Donald Trump, who said Hillary Clinton's plan is going to raise taxes and even double your taxes, and that was rated mostly false.
There have been independent analyses. They've found that for the vast majority of taxpayers, no increase or actually a tax cut. There are people on the high end of the income scale who will see their taxes go up, although it's unclear how many will see their taxes double.
All right. And now a claim from Hillary Clinton, who said we have 33,000 people a year who die from guns, and that was rated mostly true.
That number is correct, at least for the last 3 years for which statistics are available. However, two-thirds of the 33,000 are suicide.
All right. And now back to Donald Trump, who said Hillary Clinton, quote, wanted a wall. And this, of course, means with Mexico. Mm-hmm. That's rated half true.
Yeah, this is a matter of scale, if you will. She did vote for a law in 2006 to erect fencing around about 700 miles of the coast, the border. However, she's not backing the type of wall that Trump has talked about, which would be more like 1,000 miles and a much more formidable structure.
All right. And from Hillary Clinton, her claim was, we have 17 intelligence agencies, civilian and military, who have all concluded that those espionage attacks, these cyber attacks, come from the highest levels of the Kremlin, and they are designed to influence our election, and that was rated true.
That's a reference to what's been put out by WikiLeaks, the emails. The director of intelligence for the federal government, who does oversee 17 agencies, says the consensus is that those were hacked by Russia.
All right. And back to Donald Trump, whose claim was that heroin pours across our southern borders, and this was rated true.
Heroin does come across the borders from South America and Mexico. It's a major source of heroin in the U.S.
All right, and finally one more from Hillary Clinton, who said what the District of Columbia was trying to do with its handgun ban was to protect toddlers from guns, and that was rated half true.
Yeah, the ordinance that the District of Columbia put in place was partly aimed at trying to protect toddlers. However, there was also a provision to ban any guns that were not registered with the district.
All right, thanks, Tom. And for those who are looking for those claims or more, you can find them at PolitiFact.com.
For more political news, visit jsonline.com/politics. Our full JS on Politics show is also available as a podcast. You can find that on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Audioboom. That does it for today's show. Once again, I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in next week as I take you behind the award-winning reporting at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.